Roll sound, Scotty.
Take your stinking paws off me, you damn dirty ape!
Just press record.
That's all that happened. Everyone calm down.
Chant.
God. This is what 10 years of professional... We should suss this out by now, at least. You know.
Congratulations on your 10th year. It's almost like being there at the very beginning.
Yeah.
Trying to figure out how everything works.
Charlie, can you remember the very beginning?
Yeah.
What did we do?
So we did a Moorish Peros.
Yeah.
It's a Almodovar film.
Who?
Was it in a Ritu?
Yeah.
Birdman as well.
Yeah. We did a Moris Peros, Cobra.
The Great Escape.
And the Great
Cobra.
Escape.
Yeah.
Cobra is fucking Slice Alone.
Yeah. You're doing some fucking arty farty critical acclaim
this
film,
is how we
and
know.
Then you're doing
that's
Cobra.
It's kind of what Stinking Paws was.
It's a juxtaposition. I remember of Cobra is him cutting peaches.
Thank you,
scissors.
Steve.
His with scissors. Yeah.
And then shooting up
Christ
the
disease, he was the cure.
What a tagline. And we ended up really liking it as well.
We did, because it knew what it was, and you know, it's so self-aware, this movie. And we
it absolutely would have got a Golden Raspberry or something.
Yeah.
But if you,
Bridget Nielsen was in it as well.
He was in her at the time.
Ladies and gentlemen, it's the Stinking Paws podcast. It's our 10th anniversary. You can hear three other voices apart from mine. We've got Paul. Hello.
Good evening.
Charlie. Hello.
Hello.
And somewhere on a very, very dodgy Skype line, literally only about a mile away. Hello, Tom.
Hello, I could have got in the car. And I should have done.
It would have been so much fun. Tom, early listeners to the Stinking Paws podcast will know Tom as one of the hosts with Anthony of Anywhere But Here. But now he is the band biography's legend.
Yes.
And bass guitarist in Sham 69. Hello.
Hi. Yes. I still cringe when people say that. It's really weird.
Really?
Yeah.
You shouldn't.
I know.
No, Anthony's not that embarrassing. Why do you cringe when I mention him here?
That's quite interesting. I mean, we only jacked the podcast in a couple of months ago now.
Yeah.
And we could have gone on for another couple of months and made it to our own 10th anniversary. We could have gone on. Wow.
Wow. Yeah. Truth's coming out now.
Or we could have held on to the end of the year and got to like 300 episodes. But we just thought, no, it's funnier to go out at like
random
9 years and 8 months.
Yeah.
And just punk. Like. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Rip up the rule book. Don't
sure.
care about
but
the numbers.
It's like the new Sliffing Blues Phantom.
But this is the thing. You were the first of the Pod Pals. You guys started in the January.
We were in there with, yeah, I think we found Smokey and Stephen of History of Misunderstanding.
Yeah.
And then you guys.
Around about the month. Well, we started... We did some test recordings, didn't we, Charlie, about the March or April?
Yeah.
And then our first one went out June.
But wasn't it weird as well? Because obviously we have the local connection to Tom and Anne, but it transpired that Smokey lived in Strood as well.
He was born in Strood, but lived in York. Yeah.
It was this weird kind of thing where we were all from the Medway towns or Maidstone.
Yeah.
Fittingly incestuous.
Yeah. It says a lot about this area.
We're not from Sheppey.
That's true. But yeah, but, so that was going for nearly 10 years and we jacked it in just because we got the band back together. That was, I mean, we started a podcast because the band broke up and we wanted to continue doing something to keep us occupied of a weekend. And then the band got back together a couple of years ago, and which is High Frequency. And yeah, we've kind of, that's taken over more than, and the passion really was the music in the first place. So yeah, and in the meantime, like you say, I'd started up Band Biographies, and that's gone from strength to strength until recently, where I've kind of got a bit ill and a bit under the weather and have haven't had the inclination to do it. But I have to get back on that pretty soon, because otherwise it will be like 2 months and there hasn't been an episode. So there will be one.
Yeah, but podcasting is still a thing for you, Tom, because you keep getting invited onto all our shows. You know, all the pod pals are still going strong. And this is the thing I like, that we've got this group of friends that's sort of formed from nothing 10 years ago. And we've had people join, some have left, some have, like, you know, disappeared off the face of the earth. But there is this solid group. I mean, I don't think listeners are fully aware of how linked all of our podcasts are, you know, Kev, Adam, Smokey, Ben, you, all of the, all of us. And it's been constant for 10 years now, over 10 years.
Also, I think people who did podcasting for uncynical reasons, just for a passion for it, as opposed to trying to jump on the bandwagon.
It's changed now. Yeah, it's changed now.
And I think we grew closer as a group during lockdown, surprisingly, didn't we? Because we are a very regular, very messy Zoom meetings.
Legally, you know, we didn't bend rules. We'd leave that to the government. Oh, satire.
We kept a social distance of a few counties. It was
Barnham Castle.
Tom, but can you sorry, I was going to say, Tom, can you remember the very early days? You know, we never knew each other, you know, as friends, or we'd never met in person. And Charlie and I came over to your house one Sunday morning.
You did.
And we recorded in Anywhere But Here at yours. And it was the, and this is how long ago it was, Paul, because Paul wasn't part of the show then.
True.
It was the time when that plane disappeared.
Yes, yeah.
Malaysia.
Yeah. Oh, that one, right. Yeah, I remember that.
I can't remember the name of the plane now. MH something or other.
And they still haven't found it. 10 years later, they still haven't found this plane.
And for context, Anywhere But Here liked to talk, because it was weekly, talked about
current affairs.
Yeah.
So Charlie turned up with me, totally unprepared.
With a crate of Galahad, I think. Because that's been around, that meme has been around since the very beginning, basically.
If you haven't got a local Audi, you won't.
Who hasn't got a local Audi?
But it was the beer of podcasters. That's how we plugged it, was it?
Lovely afterburn.
The afterburn.
So we started drinking at about 11 o'clock, didn't we? And then went to the pub afterwards. And, we got onto the controversial subject, wasn't it? I can't remember the name of the episode now, but it was something around Save Our Souls, but it was something.
Yeah, what was the hashtag we came up with? The aeroplane.
That's
Andy,
so
will remember. Andy will remember, because
he's much better at that than I am.
But yeah, this is how long ago it was that we all got together. And do you know what? To this day, have you actually, apart from when we did the crossover thing where you guys did the Matrix, have you actually done a Stinking Paws episode? Because we promised to do like Unforgiven, Clint Eastwood, with you about 8 years ago.
We did do that one. You and I, we've sat down and done that. I think we did Unforgiven and we did another Western. Tombstone. Unforgiven and Tombstone on the same episode. Because in the one where we did a crossover, it was Ant chose the Matrix and I chose the Deer Hunter.
What did we do?
And then you guys chose.
I think you chose Tombstone.
Did I?
Yeah.
See, was it lost in the midst of time. Lost.
Tombstone came out not long after or before Unforgiven, if I remember right.
Okay.
It was an early 90s Western revival sort of era. It was like there is now with the Paramount stuff. And I think you might have chose Tombstone to complement Unforgiven, just sort of like...
Yeah.
Okay. Can't remember.
Yeah, I've been on separately to do that one as well. Right. So I have appeared on this show on my own before.
But only once or twice in 10 years. Yeah. That's
And I've been waiting for the call up for Real Britannia for about 3 or 4 years as well to do
What are we doing? Remind me.
We're doing Shane Meadows, This Is England.
Oh nice.
Excellent.
Nice.
Talking to Shane Meadows.
Well,
Dead Man Shoes coming up as well.
We are re-recording Dead Man Shoes as part of our temp. Right, let's make a commitment here with Charlie and Paul. Shall we do a Real Britannia, the four of us, rather than Stephen, the usual host of Real Britannia? We'll do This Is England with Tom as a Real Britannia.
Yeah, I'll definitely watch that.
There we go.
Okay, cool. I've never seen it. Have you not?
Never seen
it. Oh, wow. You're in for a treat.
Never seen the series? Or?
Nope.
Oh, series.
It's a bleak film, but an excellent film.
Mm. Bit like what we're going to be watching in a minute.
Yeah, I guess so.
What we've done, because it's our 10th anniversary, we have asked friends and podcasters to select movies that we've recorded and spoken about over the last 10 years. And Tom has come up with a cracker. Tom has gone for Whiplash from 2014. Quite familiar to the three of us, so much so that I think Charlie, did you rewatch it?
I didn't have to.
Paul, did you rewatch it?
I did. It's only my second watch.
Okay. How familiar are you with it, Tom?
Pretty familiar. I went to the cinema to see it on release. Yeah. I went on my birthday. It's one of my favourite things to do is go to the cinema on my own on my birthday and stay in there all day.
Nice.
That day I went to Whiplash and I also saw Ex Machina directly afterwards as well.
Okay.
And then I didn't need to go and see any more films that year because those were two pretty perfect.
Oscar Isaac.
That's right. Yeah. And what's her face?
Alicia Vikander.
I took a giant bag of popcorn into Whiplash and I didn't eat a single kernel. For the entire time.
That's the bag you bought on your birthday.
Did
you put some chocolate raisins in or whatever they put?
No, you get round them.
Yeah.
I didn't even put it in the lap of the stranger next to me. I had a bit more chance to eat stuff during Ex Machina, but there's a reason that I didn't eat anything during Whiplash. It's just, we'll get onto that, I guess.
Okay. It is Whiplash. It's Whiplash from 2014. Let's find a trailer somewhere. I'm sure there must be a great trailer. We'll be back after this.
Trailer. I'm sorry.
What's your name?
Andrew Naaman, sir.
You know who I am?
Yes, sir.
So you know I'm looking for players?
Yes, sir.
Just do your best. You're here for a reason. You believe that, right?
I'm here for a reason.
Little trouble there. You're rushing. Ready? Okay. 5, 6, and... Were you rushing or were you dragging?
I don't know.
If you deliberately sabotage my band, I will gut you like a pig.
Oh, my dear God. Are you one of those single-tier people?
His opinion means a lot to you, doesn't it?
Yeah.
I push people beyond what's expected of them. I believe that is an absolute necessity.
You won't be able to give me the time of day because you have bigger things to pursue.
That's exactly my point.
You are a worthless, friendless piece of shit whose mommy left daddy and who is now weeping and slobbering all over my drum set like a 9-year-old girl.
Start practicing harder, Neiman.
I
Why would you let him get away with what he did to you?
Because I want to be great.
Are you a rusher? Or are you a dragger? Or are you going to be on my time?
You're going to be on your time.
Keep fighting! Keep fighting! Keep fighting!
Oh, you don't do the trailer thing live, no?
Well, the trailer. We could do a brand new one if you want. You really think that's live?
No, of course.
Yeah. I think that's even got Liam in it.
It's Liam.
I think it does.
That's for you.
Yeah.
All right, Whiplash, film about drumming.
That's it.
But yeah, I'd say even after two watches, a couple of years apart, it's easily in my top five movies. It is just such a simple film when you look at it. And apparently it was only filmed, it took 19 days to film this, which is ridiculous for any film, let alone an Oscar winner.
Mm-hmm.
It's got very few cast members in, main cast members at all. I mean, you've got the drummer, the teacher, the dad, the girlfriend, and then you've got sub sort of plot.
Then yeah, you've basically got the band who are the extended family, and then that's about it really.
Yeah. And literally it's filmed in what, two or three different scenes?
It's only a couple of locations or similar locations, basically like a rehearsal room, that's all it is.
And I think the cost of it to film was only like $3 million or something silly like that, which in the 21st century to get a blockbuster film for that price is ridiculous.
Yeah. Guys, but J.K. Simmons at this point, I mean, Tom, Spider-Man movies, Jonah Jameson, but was he Oz or one of these prison things?
Yeah, like the HBO series, I think.
But he wasn't a major movie star.
I think he was an actor.
He's one of those Thingy Morse.
David Morse. Our first inductee in the Hall of Fame.
Yeah.
He's like, you know the face, you know the actor. He's never a main role, but he's always got a really good performance.
He's a character actor.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think the first film I'd seen him in was Juno, and then he was in Burn After Reading.
Yes.
And then La La Land, although that was after this, wasn't it? So,
Another
Chazelle, yeah. But I always feel like with him, whenever you see him, you're like, oh, we're in safe hands here. He's fucking class. Like,
yeah.
I remember having a conversation with Jim from the Film Thugs.
Not from Swanscombe.
No, not Jim from Swanscombe. No. That would have been a completely different conversation. And Jim said to me, have you seen Whiplash yet? And I went, no. I said, I've got a copy at home. You know, it's because the Oscar buzz, it was pre-Oscars, you know. He said, do me a favour, Scott. He said, watch it. And you're going to see a potential Oscar-winning movie, whether it be Best Supporting Actor, Best Picture, or whatever, something is going to kick in.
He won 47 awards for this film.
There you go.
47?
I didn't know you could win that for a single performance. Mental.
The other thing I didn't realise until this watch round, and it's because I wasn't really aware of them as an entity at the time, was it's a Blumhouse film.
I only noticed that last night when I watched it.
Yeah.
And I'm thinking, well, they're horror guys, you know. They're
but then you think about it, and I was like, well, actually, there are elements of that anyway. Like J.K. Simmons, when he comes in, first of all, he's lurking in the shadows. He's a bit like Jaws. You don't see him fully.
It's the bit where you see him behind the glass, isn't it?
He's lurking behind frosted glass. There are definitely horror elements in the visuals of this film, for sure. There's a lot of blood. There's more blood than you'd think of.
It's a traumatic experience as much as it's uplifting. And
it's a psychological thriller.
I remember seeing them review it on when Claudia Winkleman used to host
film 2014.
And one of the critics on there, they mentioned the fact that after measuring people's heart rates who'd watched the film, it was akin to doing a proper intense cardiovascular workout.
A movie that had me on the edge of my seat that shouldn't have had me on the edge of my seat.
Especially when he's trying to drum as fast as he can and he's bleeding and whatever. You can feel your own heart going sort of with the beat almost.
It's very clever.
It makes me regret that, like yourself, Tom, I didn't see it in the cinema. Oh, I think that would have enhanced the experience. Yeah.
I tell you what, that final scene on the stage at the very end that goes on for like 10 minutes or whatever. Oh, my God. I've never seen anything like it and never heard or experienced anything like it. It was visceral.
Is that the genius of the film, though, that the fact that it uses tropes and kind of motifs that you've seen before, but it flips them on their head a bit, which is a bit, this will be a really wanky comment and it'll be published in Huge Corner in Private Eye. It's like it takes conventional things and it transposes them in the way that jazz does with music.
Yeah.
So it's like a experimental way of dealing with something that is quite conventional, I think.
Yeah, because also, like, if anyone had sat down, how do you put this idea through to the people that are going to fund the film? It's like, I've got a film, it's about a drummer, he gets bullied a bit, he makes it good.
That's all he is.
And people are going to laugh at you. Yeah, I mean, if it was a guitarist or a vocalist or whatever, people would be all over it. It's a drummer.
I'm assuming the person who was behind the screenplay or the seed, the germ of the film, was a drummer and wanted to show people that drumming is so much more sophisticated and complex than the layman probably assumes. Like, it's a much harder thing than people give it credit for.
It's crazy when you listen to when they're playing Caravan, and like, obviously the focus is on the drum, but when it goes off and you've got the horn section come in and the trumpets and everything, and every now and again you hear this really high sort of tap on it, and you realize the drums are still sort of playing in the background. And drums is always one of those things that people think is really insignificant in music, but it's so paramount to
the rhythm section.
As a bass player, I know exactly what this
is. The rhythm section makes or breaks a band.
Yeah.
You can't have a decent band, and I keep saying this because I keep needing to justify my position. literally, as if you've got a tight drummer and bassist working together, the rest can do what they want because it builds the foundation. Yeah. That is the solid bass on which the guitarist can go off and do their wanky little solos and the singer can sing whatever the fuck they want.
This is why I love The Who.
You sound a bit bitter there.
I'm a bassist, of course I'm bitter.
This is why I love The Who, because for me, the beauty of The Who is John Entwistle and Keith Moon. And without those two, obviously, Daltrey's a great frontman, Pete Townsend's a songwriting genius, but without Entwistle and Moon, The Who are unexceptional.
Yeah, sort of average
band,
I think,
really. Like, that rhythm section really kind of enhances them. And I think it's like, it is someone trying to get that message out that, like,
it highlights the fact that these bands, whether it's jazz or rock or whatever, without that good drummer in, then
it's literally the backbone.
Yeah.
Interestingly, Damien Chazelle, before he became a filmmaker, his first love was he wanted to be a musician and struggled to make it as a jazz drummer at Princeton High School.
There you go.
He said that he had an intense music teacher in the Princeton High School studio band, who was the inspiration for the character of Terence Fletcher. So it's kind of semi-autobiographical by the seams of things.
Yeah, and the word intense teacher. It's like,
yeah, diluted. Do you think there are actually people like J.K. Simmons out there?
Yeah,
not so much now. I think this film comes out just before
the woke generation.
Yeah, without making it too political, where even remarks about someone's weight and that would be so frowned upon in a film, even if it was fictitious.
Yeah.
This film managed to come out at a time before that would be overtly scrutinised.
You can sort of almost appreciate why he does it.
He's looking for perfection, isn't he? He wants. But the thing is, for me, it's like, is he not good enough himself to be the jazz virtuoso? So he's trying to push other people. Yeah. He becomes like almost like the manager then. He's like, he's trying to mold.
The dad watching on a Sunday shouting and hollering.
That's it.
Yeah. He never made it himself.
Yeah, those who can't do it teach. Yeah. Oh, sorry.
I won't tell Joe you said that.
No, exactly what you mean. Is that
you're
so fascinated. What is Simmons' character's backstory? What was the history that led him to being like this?
We know he's competent. We know he's good, pianist.
Yeah.
But what is, you know, is he striving for something that he hasn't achieved? Or we don't know. Which makes this movie even greater because there is a backstory.
Some people are born to teach and find that talent. Some people are talent seekers, aren't they? And he's said he's never found his sort of buddy.
What's the
motivation, as we were all saying? Why is he pushing? Why is he such a bastard?
Because I think he recognises it in Taylor's character, and Taylor's his motivation is not just to be a proficient jazz musician. He wants to be in the same conversation as Charlie Parker.
Arguably
the greatest jazz musician of all time.
He lays it out to his girlfriend, doesn't he? He's like, we can't see each other anymore because you'll want to see more of me and I can't spend enough time with you, and then you'll start to resent me, and through doing that I'll start to resent you. And it's like, none of this is about her, it's all about him. He is so self-obsessed and so self-absorbed at becoming the greatest drummer of all time.
You start to see Simmons in Teller.
I was just going to say, in the beginning when they get together, it's really quite sweet. He's quite awkward. And he hasn't quite, he's just got into the band, hasn't he?
Yeah.
And he's kind of on a high, so he asks the girl out. And then they go on a date.
Is she the vendor at the cinema?
Yeah. She works at the cinema that him and his dad go to.
Rafifi,
which is a film that you've done, isn't it?
But on that subject, what got me was the family meal. When you've got the jock saying he threw a 93-yard touchdown and all that.
Yeah.
And then he really lets rip about.
He's like, but it's third division.
Remembered. I want to be remembered because everyone knows Charlie Parker. And it's like, but he's done this. And it's like, but.
Died of heroin overdose.
But we still know him now. It's like, you're not going to be known in whatever 30, 40 years time sort of thing.
It's a social comment because it's like, why is it that someone who's good at sport guarded so much higher than someone who wants to be a great musician?
And it's also, it comes down to certain careers in the arts not being looked upon as careers. And we've had this through COVID as well, that the arts was the first thing that got shut down. Then we all had to retrain to do something else, you know, become a ballet computer programmer. Ballet dancer to coder. And then there was the last industry to open up again, not getting political. But yeah, people don't see it as a proper career. And I think there was part of me that related to what he was trying to say, but then he just takes it far too far and gets personal with people around the table. Yeah. And you're like, there you go again. It's that selfish, like...
He's with him.
There's a certain bit of egotistical sort of naivety about it.
Which I guess everyone who's at the top of their game has to some point. I mean, you know, we were talking very briefly earlier on before we started the call about Max Verstappen today, right? And it's like every world champion becomes a little bit arrogant.
Say a wanker. Talking of cunt, right? Milk the cunts.
Whiplash last night.
Right. Did everyone hear this? Right when they start just before Fletcher walks in, when the band are all there, and it said, it says, "Milk the cunt."
Yeah, yeah. What was that?
Right, that is apparently tuning everyone to C.
Ah.
Ready for him to walk in like 10 seconds later.
No. Milk the cunt. Well, that's going to be
so my opening intro. So it's milk the C. Yeah. So C.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, but that's to get them tuned up, ready for him to walk in.
Well, someone's done their research.
Well, yeah, well, again. But at the beginning of every Stinking Paws podcast from now on, I'm going to tell you to milk the cum.
At home and do it over Skype. That time. Yeah.
I'm doing it. I would have said, which one of us is the cunt tonight?
Answers on a postcard, listeners. Here we
milk the cunt!
But in that scene, just after they milk the cunt and they play the thing, and he
just the way you said that.
It's a general term. I can use it in general.
It is now. It's always a bit more significant when an American uses that term.
Yeah,
you don't often hear it in American films.
They've got to be really frustrated or angry to use that term, whereas we throw it around like a bit of punctuation in this country.
Go on, Todd. What were you saying?
No, I was just going to say, like, then he eviscerates that guy for being out of tune, and I just wondered whether or not there was one instrument playing out of tune, because I can't hear it.
Oh god, no.
I've got a relatively good ear, but in a band that size with like four trombones, four trumpets, two saxophones, they're all going at the speed that they're going at, I wondered whether there was, because there is one foot that's tapping slightly out of time.
Mm-hmm.
And you're like, well, he's heard that, and then they start again and he's like, someone in here is out of tune, and I'm sure someone must be, but
it's the same as when it says, are you dragging or are you fast?
That is,
and it's like, I've no clue. It sounded good to me.
Yeah, but I got the concept of that when he started slapping.
Oh, yeah. Because it was like, oh, he's a little bit fast. Yes, yeah.
I know where you're going.
Yeah.
But for me, that hasn't got a tuneful ear in his body, I didn't know if anything was out of tune at all at that particular point. So was it an excuse just to get rid of that guy, or
was it motivational?
It almost felt like a show of power in front of the new drummer.
Yeah.
Because then he takes him outside and he's like, oh, so are there any musicians in your family? He starts talking to him about that. Just come in and have fun. Because one of the things I've got most down in my notes is abusive, an abuser.
Yeah.
And he comes across as an abusive partner, almost. Like, he's very kind of, he's almost like not loving, but he's kind of placating and nice.
Yeah.
And then he gets in there, and we'll get into it.
Can we say, like, just go right back to that sort of fairly near the beginning scene where he takes him out into the corridor and he starts asking the personal questions about his family, that his mother died.
Is that just ammunition for the future?
But he uses it pretty much immediately.
Again and again.
And then, you know, his father, you know, being a failed Eugene O'Neill, or whatever he says.
You've got no mother, she pissed off when you were young, sort of thing,
Because you're sort of uplifted at this point, because he's like, no, it's okay, there's something wrong there, he says, but give it a go, come on, go in there and have some fun. Yeah, and then he's sort of like encouraging him, bang, he throws the cymbal, which he speaks about in the corridor.
Or the chair or whatever.
Yeah, chair, he throws the chair, because he talks about, was it Charlie Parker or whatever, throwing the cymbal. And you think, mate, you know exactly where we're going with this guy. Or do we know where we're going with this guy? Yeah, because we don't know what the motivations are for his behaviour at all, you know. Paul, I mean, you said two watches already in your top five.
There's obviously, having only seen it once, there was bits that I hadn't fully remembered. I remembered that he was in a rush to get to the recital.
The competition, and
the car. I remember him getting in the car and forgetting his sticks, but it wasn't until he got back in the car and tried to regain his sticks that he got blooming
T-boned at a junction
by a lorry.
Yeah, and then still made it onto the stage covered in blood, trying to drum, and he's obviously got concussion or something going on. But that obviously shows the determination of the character to perform, knowing that he didn't want anyone else to take his spot, knowing that he could do this. The whole story, it's not your typical, oh, it's a feel-good story. He's a good drummer. He gets bullied a little bit, but makes it at the end.
It's not the Rocky story like we were talking about.
No, there's so many ups and downs all the way through it. Even to the point right at the end where I said earlier that it appears that Fletcher is just getting revenge because he know he dobbed him in.
Mm.
But he overcomes that by leaving a stage, going back, doing this awesome drum solo, even to the point he gets cocky and he went, just follow my lead sort of thing.
Well, this is what I love about that scene, and that's the Rocky scene, that's the boxing match, that's J.K. Simmons knocking him to the floor in the first round with the unprepared first song and the telling him, like, I know it was you that got me fired. Then Teller walks off the stage, almost goes away with his old man, but then decides that it's a fucking test and gets back out on the stage again, plays Whiplash, and then does the insane drum solo. But he was counting in the bassist into Whiplash.
Yeah.
Didn't let, like, he put J.K. Simmons against the ropes by starting the song before he was ready as the conductor. And then in that final bit where he's doing the drum solo that goes on forever, there's a bit where, like, J.K. Simmons is pissed off, and then you see a smile creep into his face. So he comes in, they start working together, all the kind of
he slows him down. Brilliant scene.
And it's so good. And you can see at that point they've gained a kind of mutual, it's like the Apollo Rocky thing. They've gained a mutual kind of appreciation of each other. But I think there's still a question mark at the end of the film as to whether or not that relationship is still toxic after that performance.
It's not wrapped up with a Nico, is it, by any means?
No.
It's an ambiguous ending still.
Yeah.
I like to think that there is still that animosity between him.
Just wants to don't make Whiplash 2. That's where the Rocky thing should end. Sequels, please.
Well, we're on our 8th sequel now, or whatever it is, with three.
Absolutely.
Well, apparently the latest Creed film is the first one where Sylvester Stallone doesn't even appear.
He's not in it.
They say his name once, I think.
Right.
Rocky's name is mentioned once, and that's it.
It's so interesting that you mentioned that, though, Tom, because, like I say, I went to this film with more knowledge of it than you, because it was getting so many rave reviews at the time. And I saw the film 2014 episode and they were talking about it. And it was, I think it was Danny Lee, the film critic? He made the same comparison that you made about the boxing thing. And he said, it is very much in that Rocky mold, but don't let that put you off. It's a variation on the theme kind of thing.
It's not evident. I mean, it's not blindingly obvious that you're going to compare this to Rocky. But for people like us that like talking about movies and like talking about sort of things like this, we can see the comparison. We can see how this thing, is going to pan out. It's not strictly a Rocky clone as such. It's nothing like a Rocky clone, it's just done in a really clever way.
I think, as you say, I think the more films you watch, the more you come to realise that there are only so many variations.
There's only so many
Joseph
stories.
Campbell,
is it five or seven or something that?
And this is a variation of Beat Upon Guy Does Good. Literally, that's all it is. Beat Upon Guy Does Good. And we don't have to know anything about his background, because he's got a fairly stable familial family background, doesn't it?
I believe it's like an Ivy League. Is it an Ivy League?
Ivy League. All the kids are going through college.
His father's done college.
All right. His mum left when he was a child or whatever.
But he's from a comfortable middle class.
A stable environment. It's not a broken family as such.
He grew up in an artistic and creative environment.
And this is the bit I liked. And seeing Paul Reiser as well, who Tom probably best knows from Aliens. An American audience will know from the he was in some sitcom, wasn't he? I can't remember what it was. Was it Mad About You or something, wasn't it? One of the American sitcoms he was in. But we only know him from that, don't we, really?
That helps sometimes, I think, because you watch an actor's performance without prejudice.
True.
It's not, that's him.
Like, but then, like somebody pointed out earlier, the actual cast, all right, there's a cast of a couple of dozen, but we're only focusing on three.
Even at this point as well, even Miles Teller had only been in one or two films before this and maybe an episode of something, you know, here and there. He'd not really done very much. And to go up against J.K. Simmons, who, isn't well known in the film world, perhaps, but has definitely been in enough. And surely, I would imagine, has a background in stage acting. I would imagine he's got that kind of and to go up and be what I would say a co-lead against J.K. Simmons on your second or third film and actually stand up and like kind of match him in intensity,
which is it's like a meta thing for the characters themselves, because an upcoming musician.
That's true.
Is this like Chazelle's directorial debut, or did he do stuff before this?
I don't know off the top of my head.
Obviously, he did La La Land because of the claim of this, he's got the cast in La La Land. He's got Emma Stone, he's got Gosling.
J.K. Simmons on Broadway played Benny Southstreet in the 1992 revival of Guys and Dolls.
Oh,
he's also sang multiple roles in the Wagner opera satire Das Barbecue. He also played the role of Jigger in the revival of Carousel. So he's done an awful lot of musical stage before he went into first appearance in a live action TV role in the show Popeye Doyle.
Wow.
Which was a spin-off of
And Damien Chazelle had directed three films before this, one called Guy and Madeline on a Park Bench. But yeah, the other ones were The Last Exorcism Part 2 and Grand Piano.
All right, gang, whiplash. Little under tempo, okay? Neiman, just do your best. Here we go. 5, 6, and... Let's hear some fills. Got Buddy Rich here. Little trouble there. Let's pick it up at 17. Ready? 5, 6, and... Not quite my tempo. Here we go. 5, 6, and... Downbeat on 18. Okay, here we go. 5, 6, and... Bar 17, the and of 4. Got it? 5, 6, 7. Not quite my tempo. It's all good. No worries. Here we go. 5, 6, 7. You're rushing. Here we go. Ready? Okay. 5, 6, and. Dragging just a hair. Wait for my cue. 5, 6, 7. Rushing. 5, 6, and. Dragging. 5, 6,
Why do you suppose I just hurled a chair at your head, Neiman?
I don't know.
Sure you do.
The tempo?
Were you rushing or were you dragging?
I don't know.
Start counting.
5, 6, 7.
In 4, damn it! Look at me!
1, 2, 3, 4. 1, 2, 3, 4. 1, 2, 3, 4.
Now, was I rushing or was I dragging?
I don't know.
Count again.
1, 2, 3, 4. 1, 2, 3, 4. 1, 2, 3, 4.
Rushing or dragging?
Rushing.
So you do know the difference! If you deliberately sabotage my band, I will fuck you like a pig. Now, are you a rusher or are you a dragger? Or are you going to be on my fucking time?
I'm going to be on your time.
What does that say?
Quarter note equals 215.
Count me at 215.
1, 2, 3, 4. 1, 2, 3, 4.
Jesus fucking Christ. I didn't know they allowed retards into Schaefer. Am I to understand that you cannot read tempo? Can you even fucking read music? What is that?
8th note?
Yes, what is that?
Dotted 16th note.
Sight read measure 101.
Bubba, 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 bubba.
What are you, in a fucking a cappella group? Play the goddamn kit! Stop! Now answer my question. Were you rushing or were you dragging? Answer!
Rushing.
Oh, my dear God. Are you one of those single-tier people? Do I look like a double fucking rainbow to you? You must be upset. Are you upset?
No.
No? So you just don't give a shit about any of this?
I do give a shit about this.
Are you upset? Yes or fucking no? Yes, you are upset.
Yeah.
Say it.
I'm upset.
Say it so the whole band can hear you.
I'm upset.
Louder!
I'm upset.
Louder!
I'm upset!
You are a worthless, friendless, faggot-lipped little piece of shit whose mommy left daddy when she figured out he wasn't Eugene O'Neill and who is now weeping and slobbering all over my drum set like a fucking 9-year-old girl. So for the final father-fucking time, say it louder!
I'm upset!
Carl. Start practicing harder, Neiman. Whiplash, bar 125, big boy tempo, 5, 6, and.
But there's a lot of quotable stuff here as well from J.K. Simmons too. Like, that not my tempo was something that I started to use in real life. Mm-hmm. Just when something wasn't quite going the way I wanted it to.
I actually watched that because I've used that before and we've used that. And rewatching the film this morning, it never says not my tempo. It says not quite my tempo.
Yeah.
It's going to be one of those play it again, Sam.
Yeah.
Beam me up, Scotty.
Yeah.
All these things that people think they say.
Am I right in thinking this is based on a short film that Giselle did before?
Based on a bit of life experience. Yeah, he made a 2 or 3 minute film of it.
I remember when it first came out, I went back and watched some sort of short movie that he did, which was the...
And that's what had J.K. Simmons in it.
Right.
Yeah.
And then
I think it's on the DVD or was Blu-ray as an extra.
That might be where I saw it then. There was a short film that was the precursor to this that...
Yeah.
What Whiplash eventually became.
Mm.
How cool is that? You know, you make a short film and it becomes an Oscar-winning movie.
Yeah. It's incredible, but isn't it?
Cole sort of alluded to it earlier. Like, I can't imagine pitching the idea of an aspiring jazz drummer being, you know, at a time when, like, the Marvel stuff and that's coming.
Yeah.
And
films it sounds sort of incredibly niche, doesn't it?
Yeah. So I'm guessing they probably needed something to see... to then visualise what it could become.
Yeah, because I don't know if I'd have ever watched this movie had I not been involved in this podcast and someone...
Was that the only reason you watched it? Because it was part of the show?
Yeah, because you know me, I've got this aversion to certain Oscar-winning movies because they are a lot of them so pretentious and so niche that you avoid them at all costs. But... I mean, I must admit, I'd heard of the film before I first watched it, and I was sort of slightly interested in it, so it was a good excuse to watch it. And the fact that we have this sort of unwritten rule of movies 10 years and older, this is the second time we've reviewed it now, and it broken that twice.
But I think,
well, what is it? Yeah, 9 years, yeah.
Yeah,
I also think that we can tell that this film will stand the test of time.
That's the thing. Helps. It's a subject and so well filmed that it doesn't matter if you watch this 50 years' time.
Well, there's no special effects in it to date it at all.
No.
And it's inspired by musicians who've been dead for several decades.
Yeah.
It's like the only thing you could slightly date it on would be the fact that he gets a text off his girlfriend or whatever.
Yeah,
or
phone the cars.
But like, other than that,
even the films you go to the cinema to watch your retro.
That's true.
Other than that, this could be filmed in the 60s or 70s or 2010 or 2020 or 2030. It's not dated to that extreme where you're going to go, oh, this is fucking shit. This is like...
Yeah. But ironically, there is a sort of modern sheen about it as well, because I think that's what Chazelle does really well with La La Land. He gives it this sort of...
Yeah.
It's not overtly like sort of flamboyant, but it does give it a modern filmmaking kind of look, doesn't it? La La Land's a great example of that, because it's like harking back to the studio musical era, but doing it in a modern way. This is the same, actually. I was just floored by it, I thought. And I will say, like, one of my favourite things about the film is not just the narrative and the performances, but the way it's handled overall. Mm-hmm. I think in the hands of a lesser filmmaker, it might not...
It could have become rocky.
It could have got melodramatic, couldn't it?
Yeah.
It never steps over into melodrama.
The general feedback I'm getting from the three of you is four of me, including me here, we love this movie.
Mm.
And it's a fairly recent movie, as Paul has pointed out. You know, we've reviewed it twice in the last 10 years.
Mm.
Why has this struck home with us? What's special about this movie that
I think the simplicity of it.
That's an idea. Yeah, actually, it is very simple story, very simple premise.
It's not going for shock values in any way.
Shocking bits, but they're not gratuitous.
Yeah, it's not concentrating on those bits. It's not going for big stars. It's not going for amazing scenes that will go, oh yeah, that was it. It was the whole content and the whole storyline of it. It was on extremely low budget. I believe it's the lowest budget ever to win an Oscar.
Wow.
So it is just simply on the acting and the storyline. Yeah,
it's merits. Mm. And I think there's an irony, because obviously you selected it, Tom, because you're a very musical person.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't think you have to be into music
to appreciate
absolutely not. Yeah.
Do you know what? I'll just recognise what Paul has just been saying. You like this movie for exactly the same reasons you like Room.
Yeah.
It was a simple story. You didn't know anything about it. There was no pretentiousness about it. And it just came out of nowhere as well. You know, it was just something that took you by surprise.
Yeah, it's not trying to be Hollywood. It's not trying to, it's not got a director that's trying to be pretentious or anything like our last viewing, which was Irreversible. He's just portraying a simple, decent story. It's got its feel-good factors. It's got its horrible factors in it. It's just a portrayal of life rather than anything fantastical.
I don't know anyone who has seen the film who's got a bad word to say about it, in simple terms, is the best acclaim I can give.
Yeah.
Mm.
Really? I've never heard a negative review.
Well, I don't think there's anything you can pick apart about it, though. There's no bad acting. There's no bad dialogue. Like, the way that it's edited together is incredible.
Because
There's a kineticism to it, even though you're watching a drummer. Drumming is a very static thing.
Mm.
And to make it look dynamic is quite, I'd imagine it's quite difficult to do.
Yeah.
I didn't even know you could tune drums until this film.
Oh, yeah.
Again, you don't need the background knowledge to enjoy this, do you?
Yeah.
No, when he said, was it, I'll give us a B flat, and I'm like, how can you tune a drum to a B flat?
I think the genesis of the film comes out of people's misunderstanding of what a craft drumming is.
Yeah.
I mean, I've sat at a drum kit before and tried, and apart from a simple paradiddle, I've failed.
I can't rub my belly and pat my head.
No, that's it. That's what you've got to do. You've got to have all four of your limbs doing something doing something different from each other. That's the thing. It's like rubbing your head and patting your belly, and also doing things with your feet at the same time. Like,
and keeping up with some of the most talented musicians that you ever encounter.
And Miles Teller actually took up the drums to play this part as well. A lot of it, I think it's like 90% of all of the drumming in the film is done by him.
Oh, brilliant. Yeah. I didn't know that.
It's only the bits where it's really close in and really technical that they did any ADR or close up of someone else's hands.
Right. Because I find method quite pretentious at times, but I can totally understand.
Oh, you've got to do it. Yeah,
this kind of thing,
to
portray a musician, I feel like you have to know, even if you're miming, you've got to know where those chord shapes are or where that, you know, where the hits are.
It's not like De Niro going, I dropped a tab for a year before Taxi
Driver. Or Daniel Day-Lewis learning to sew dresses for 5 years. I think you're absolutely right. It's a very simple story about simple things told in a simple way that isn't condescending, which it could be when it's about jazz. It could be really over the heads of a lot of people, but it's not. And the other thing that I really want to say is you guys starting to smoke has given that kind of jazz club feel. Like, nice. Shades.
Just all about the atmosphere.
We're actually recording in Ronnie Scott.
We are.
We're just about to take five.
And interestingly, Ronnie Scott's biggest regret was that he never got Charlie Parker to play at his club. Synergy.
Gentlemen, is this the greatest music movie of the last 10 years?
The last 10 years, most certainly. Yeah,
because I'll narrow it down to 10 for the moment.
Well, I think La La Land's in that conversation as well, because it is also about aspiring musicians and same director.
I know you had problems with La La Land, but...
No, initially I did, because like the opening number, the first 10 minutes made me sympathise with School Shooters.
Yeah, I love the opening number. That's the thing.
But then it did that on purpose.
Yes.
It lulled you into thinking it was going to be razzmatazz, and it wasn't entirely that at all.
Yeah.
I think Damien Chazelle has got a real thing about workaholism. Because again,
made up word anyway, so
so I'm going to expand on the made up word. If you can say it, it means the thing that you mean for it to mean. I think he's got a real kind of, I think he's quite a cold person, because if the drummer in this is based on him, and then you've got La La Land as well, which is like White Man Saves Jazz as well. I'm conflicted on La La Land. I've only watched it once, and I kind of wasn't sure. I need to go back and revisit it, I think. But at the end of it, like, he dumps Emma Stone because she gets a regular job or something. And you're like, oh, well, you're clearly a massive perfectionist and a bit of an arsehole.
You've done two films where the fucking lead actor
dumps the girlfriend
because of his aspiration.
Yeah. That's what I'm saying. I think Damien Chazelle, that's something in him, perhaps. I don't know.
Interesting to see where he goes in his career now, because I believe his last film, was it Amsterdam?
Yeah.
It was like a categorical flop.
I watched that recently, and I really was like, what is this? It's,
and I thought he was going to be the golden show of cinema.
Yeah. Not a hit. But this film.
Yeah, have to agree.
If he never does anything else, this will speak for itself.
The thing that stands out for me is the fact that Paul has popped it into his top five.
That's,
you know...
That's with four other Rocky films.
Oh, The Untouchables. An iRobot. That is like a genuine reaction from somebody.
You can't get a better endorsement than that.
I don't know, Paul, I'm going to go back to you here. why? Why have you popped it in there? Is it J.K. Simmons? Is it the acting? Is it the story? Is it the whole premise of it? Or is it just, it's a fucking great film?
I say, I remember when we first viewed it, how much I enjoyed it.
Yeah.
And we had a great discussion good on film, it then. Yeah. I was looking forward to watching it again.
Mm-hmm.
And I watched it this morning, put it on just after 10 o'clock this morning. Did not touch my phone, did not do anything other than watch this film mm-hmm. from start to finish. And in this day and age, that is as high a sort of acclaim of a film that you can give, that you're sitting at home and you're not checking Facebook or playing a game mm-hmm. on your phone.
Because it's so easy to do.
Yeah. And it's just enthralling without being extraordinary. Like, it's not relying on CGI, it's not relying on anything in the film. Yeah, it's not got any scenes in it you go, oh, that was absolutely out of this world. It's an enthralling story just of an average sort of person that's just very good at their craft. And it just doesn't leave you expecting more. You want more. Even at the end, when he'd finished his drum solo and it goes to the credits, I was wanting more. I was even a little bit of the audience cheering and clapping. I was wanting that.
I think because you're having an adrenaline rush.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. You wanted to see his achievement. I was curious as to whether he went on to do anything after that.
Mm.
And if a film can leave you sort of imagining what has gone on after that, then it's done its job.
I think,
but not a sequel.
Without
Charlie said earlier on, don't want a sequel.
No,
I can't remember what film critic it was. It might have been one of the every years like Ebert or Pauline Kael, and they said a film really succeeds not because of how much you enjoy it at the time, but because it stays with you when you're leaving the theatre or when you turn the TV off, and you're still thinking about it days and days after, and potentially months and years as well.
Yeah, I want someone to tell me that he went on to be a big drummer in the biggest ensemble ever. Or
Rolling Stones need a...
Yeah. But in the same respect, I don't want that knowledge.
Yeah, exactly.
Because I don't want to be disappointed by it.
Yeah.
And that's a perfect way to leave the film.
And I think there's some excellent lines in this as well. Like I say, I've used not quite my tempo in real life, but there's the other really kind of the gravitas scene that comes in that bit where they're sitting in the cafe at the end, towards the end. And he said the good job thing.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Where he says like the two most dangerous words in the English language, a good job, because if someone had told Charlie Parker good job, oh, you're okay, it's fine, he wouldn't have pushed himself to go further. And that was something that has really kind of it's stuck with me, in that I don't say those words anymore to anyone unless I'm being a sarcastic asshole and they don't but they don't realize I'm doing it. Oh, good
I
job.
Can't believe you do that, Tom.
No, yeah, I know. It's not me at all.
It's almost like you have been sarcastic there.
Almost.
What? What? Never used sarcasm.
But it stuck with me. It's like, oh, yeah, well, maybe good job is not good enough, is it? Like, yeah. If you want to be good at something, you've got to be a bit more single-minded and a bit more in search of perfection. But there's a line, I feel, and this film shows the danger of crossing that line from
it literally nearly dies.
Yeah, exactly. and that's the best. That again, it ties into a lot of other psychological thrillers and those types of film. Like a lot of Hitchcock is about people who are obsessed with something, whether it's a woman, whether it's this or that, you know. And again, that's another way that it feeds into to tropes that we understand.
How can you channel your obsession into good art?
Yeah.
Because basically saying someone good job is saying, well done, you've done what you've been paid to. You've
performed. Yeah. It's like, perfunctory. Yeah, exactly, yeah. That.
You've performed adequately.
To the level I expected. Oh, yeah, no. Actually.
Tom, you're talking about quotes.
Hmm.
That's not your boyfriend's dick. Do not come early.
Get the fuck out of my sight before I demolish you.
Sort of play as fast as you wank.
There was a lot of a lot of kind of gay.
Yeah.
Was there anything to do with like race as well?
There was a lot of faggot and stuff like that.
Get out of my sight, mini me. I think was
mini. Yeah, that was just after. Yeah, get out. Get the fuck out.
If you deliberately sabotage my band, I will fuck you like a pig.
So it is sort of like a sequel itself,
doesn't it? Yeah. Actually, I want to thank Tom for bringing us a fucking movie of the last couple of weeks that doesn't feature male fucking anal rape.
It didn't feature it. It just alluded to it.
It's an Easter egg on the DVD.
But I tell you what, there's quotes for days on this, and J.K. Simmons' character, as much as he's a complete asshole, like, he gets all the best lines.
Absolutely,
in this, and like, I laugh at them because the delivery is so brutal.
There's no fucking Mars bar down there. What are you looking at?
By a bunch of fucking limp dick, sour note, flatter than their girlfriends, flexible tempo dipshits. Got it? One more thing, Eugene, give me that. If I ever find one of these lying around again, I swear to fucking God, I will stop being so polite. Get the fuck out of my sight before I demolish you. You never earned anything. God, you are a self-righteous prick.
The folder is your fucking responsibility, Tanner. Why would you give it to Neiman? Right? You give a calculator to a fucking retard, he's gonna try to turn on a TV with it. Now get your sticks and get your ass on stage. Why do you suppose I just hurled a chair at your head, Neiman?
I don't know.
Sure you do.
The tempo?
Were you rushing or were you dragging?
I don't know.
Start counting.
5, 6, 7.
In four, damn it! Look at me!
1, 2, 3, 4. 1, 2, 3, 4. 1, 2, 3, 4.
Now, was I rushing or was I dragging?
No.
Count again.
1, 2, 3, 4. 1, 2, 3, 4. 1, 2, 3, 4.
Rushing or dragging?
Rushing.
So you do know the difference!
Sorry, guys. Hate to put you through this. If you need to fucking take a dump or get a coffee, whatever, now might be a good time, because we're going to stay here until I find a drummer who can fucking play in time. I apologize to the musicians. Seriously, take 10, 20, a fucking hour. You hear me, cocksuckers? You better start shitting me perfect 400s. Connolly, get your fucking ass back on the kit. You know, you actually do look quite a bit like a leprechaun. I think I'm going to start calling you Flannery. Is that really the fastest you can play, you worthless, hymie fuck? No wonder Mommy ran out on you. Get off the fucking kit. And here comes Mr. Gay Pride of the Upper West Side himself. Unfortunately, this is not a Bette Midler concert. We will not be serving cosmopolitans in Baked Alaska, so just play faster than you give fucking hand jobs, will you please? Jesus fucking Christ! I didn't know they allowed retards into Schaefer. Am I to understand that you cannot read tempo? Can you even fucking read music? What is that?
Eighth note?
Yes, what is that?
Dotted 16th note.
Sight read measure 101.
Bubba 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 bum.
What are you, in a fucking a cappella group? Play the goddamn kit! Stop! Now answer my question. Were you rushing or were you dragging? Answer!
Rushing.
You never earned anything. God, you are a self-righteous prick. You got 10 minutes, you fucking pathetic pansy-ass fruit fuck.
It makes me wonder if he actually contributed to that and wrote them himself.
Surely then.
I'd love it to be.
Apparently he only ad-libbed one line.
Oh.
I do wonder how this would be received now with that sort of dialogue.
Yeah.
But then again, how could someone with the initials JK possibly be cancelled?
He shoots his scores,
rolling,
Tom.
Rolling.
Has anybody got any final thoughts they want to say before we
The other thing, like the bit where he was surprised by the song that he didn't know that he was gonna be playing
yeah.
at that recital at the end. The ripple of applause that goes through that massive yeah. room, the Carnegie Hall, and there's just that light.
Yeah. And it was delayed as well.
I fucking had that and it hurts like a motherfucker.
Yeah, but at least you played Carnegie Hall, mate.
Like, I've never played, no, and admittedly, it's a golf clap in a pub and like one
yeah,
person.
Yeah.
I've played gigs to one person before and that's like, they're the toughest ones.
Yeah. Especially when they walk out.
Yeah, yeah. Especially when they come right up to the microphone and stand right in front of you.
Yeah.
That's,
can you play any country?
Can you play any Nickelback? Can you play any Metallica?
No.
Yeah.
No. We're going down the
path. But yeah, that bit is like terrifying and gives me nightmares. But yeah, sorry.
Was that
Jerry
Springer tribute?
Oh, final thoughts.
Final thoughts. Oh, yeah, yeah.
Barry Springer.
Barry Springer, as he is now. Yes.
Barry. Track show ghost.
Oh, nice.
I think it's unanimous. We fucking love this movie, don't we? But
As Charlie said about no one, he's not heard of anyone say a bad thing about it.
Yeah.
How can you pick out anything about this movie that is not awesome?
It's a simple concept and it's done fucking well, basically. Yeah. You know, that's the only way we can describe it. And Tom, thank you for bringing that back to us again as a re-review.
Yeah. Out of all the list of movies we're redoing this year, when Scott said, Whiplash, Tom speaks out, well, it's Whiplash, I was like, brilliant.
See, I absolutely
just wanted to watch it again.
I was the opposite because I thought, I find it easier to talk about a film that I have problems with, and yet we've had a great discussion about it.
Yeah.
Last week with Irreversible, because I really didn't like it, I've got so much more to say about it, but... On the flip side, you've got a film like this.
It's a lot easier to be a sports journalist if you support Millwall rather than Manchester United.
I don't know any sports journalists that actually support Millwall.
I don't know anyone else who can spell who supports Millwall. Sorry.
Tell you what, chaps, let's take a break. We'll be back after this.
And now, preview time. When it comes to entertainment, you can't beat a good film. So let's take a look at what's coming your way.
All right.
Yeah, I'm good.
I'm
waiting for you to speak.
When you look at me like that, it's like when a dog looks at you and it's having a shit.
Wow.
A thousand yards stare.
Yeah.
I hate to say it, but
he's having one now.
Can I have to go and smell him off?
There's a reason I wear these adult nappies.
Cameo.
This is the man I choose to go on holiday with. He's done it again. He just does that. Stop. Look at Tom.
Now you know all the women
look over here.
The women on public transport are in fear. Yes, it's like. So that was Whiplash, lads. We have decided that as part of our 10-year anniversary, we're going to invite Tom back because we've absolutely enjoyed this evening's conversation.
This has been a fantastic get together, I think.
Absolutely.
It's been okay.
It's been okay, says Paul.
Great, great choice of film, great discussion.
No, it's been
very organic discussion.
Yeah, it's definitely a film where it's not one you expect everyone to like, but everyone just does like it.
The fact that the BBC show it quite a bit as well speaks volumes about its popularity.
Yeah.
And it's one of them films where, as much as I didn't watch it for this review, if I got home tonight and it was halfway through, I'd sit and watch the rest of it.
Right. What we've done, we've thrown the list of 200 plus Stinking Paws movies at Tom in the break. And I could see the pain on his face as it was playing through it. Because obviously some have been like selected, you know, that we're going to re-review. And
some are shit.
And some are really shit, you know.
It's if like you pick Minesweeper.
Yeah.
If you pick out Mildred Pierce, I'm going.
There was a part of me. There was Mildred Pierce. Grave, it was Cop and a Half, Grave of the Fireflies, Space Jam. There's a lot.
The classic Stinking Paws movies. Yeah.
What was that samurai shit that we watched? That
Throne of Blood.
No, the
the one with Ghost Dog.
Ghost Dog.
It's the soundtrack for that. Show some respect to the Wu-Tang Clan.
Yeah, but you chose it and then didn't turn up.
Why not?
Absolute japes, that was.
While we were on the break, Tom said, oh, I've got two or three, he said, and I'm not going to make my decision now until you actually ask me. So, Tom, I'm asking you, what are we going to be re-reviewing?
Well, I really hope that someone else hasn't chosen it. I don't remember anyone mentioning it, but I'm going to go with The Thing.
Oh, absolute beauty.
Great.
Paul has not seen it. He hates horror movies.
No way.
I'm not a horror fan.
I don't like horror films, but this is one of my favourite films of all time.
Absolutely.
Paul, I would bet everything I own on you enjoying it.
Yeah.
You definitely will.
Has this only got one version, or has this got an old and a new version?
It's a remake and there's a prequel.
It's a remake of The Thing from Outer Space, isn't it?
John Carpenter, 1982.
We saw it at the Prince Charles.
I did go.
Did I see you, Tom? No, we were going to go.
We went to see Lawrence of Arabia together.
Yeah, we were going.
I think we were going to go and someone else went instead or something like that. I can't remember.
This is the one I saw in 70mm at the Prince Charles.
And it was pink.
It had a pink hue. And Charles went, it's a popular character around Soho.
Did you go to see Lawrence of Arabia and I couldn't go?
I've seen Lawrence of Arabia about three times on my own because I've been let down by everybody.
Every year,
somebody lets me down when I go to see Lawrence of Arabia.
Sorry, mate. I love you, but not as much.
I went. We had a lovely day out.
We did indeed, mate. We did. The Thing is a fucking great choice because this man sitting to my left here, Paul, why have you not seen it? You've got some aversion to horror movies. What's the reason why?
Don't do horror movies in general.
He picks up the shorts.
That's how cracked my choice of horror movies
this is. This is the thing, since kind of knowing a lot of you film guys and stuff, I've started to look at films that are especially rated H, for example. Like, I wouldn't have watched Hellraiser ever if it weren't for them making me watch Hellraiser. And then I was like, oh, actually, it's not that bad.
I like Hellraiser.
Well, this is it. This is what I'm saying. The Thing is not, it's not that's really, like, it's definitely a horror film, but sci-fi horror is something that I can get my head around, I think.
Do you like
Alien?
No, I've never seen it.
He's never seen a single Alien movie.
I regard The Thing.
Look at his face. Look at
right,
tell
okay. you
what, The Thing. I love sci-fi. I don't like horror.
It's just as much as a sci-fi film. I would say it's more suspenseful than horrific.
Yeah. There's like two or three scenes that are what I would say horrific, but the rest of it is suspense. It's a real suspenseful film.
Hitchcockian.
Given the age of the film, Paul would laugh at those special effects and the horror scenes. But
well, you're going to get a very unique view then, aren't you?
Yeah, we might edit you out,
mate. Take it from me, I'm not a horror fan at all.
Mm-hmm. Me neither.
It might be in my top 10 films of all time.
It's in my top 5, and I don't watch horror films.
It's brilliant, and it's, I think what it is with The Thing as well is that it kind of, I don't know, it harks back to an era pre-CGI.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Is it See, I always practical hear the title of the thing and immediately I think B movie.
Well, the original remake of B movie.
Yeah. That's what just sort of goes into my mind. Is right,
just forget that. Just forget. Yeah. You got Kurt Russell.
Yeah, it's all right.
That's all you got to know. That's all you got to know. Tom, that is a great choice, mate.
Oh, I'm really glad.
Yeah.
There's only two, what I'd say, massive jump scares, but not horrendous.
Yeah, but that's probably not what's going to affect Paul. I mean, Paul just doesn't like the concept of a horror movie.
I'm the same.
Yeah.
Why sit there and want to be frightened?
But it's no, I'm exactly the same as you. I don't want to get frightened. I don't really like that feeling, but
I like a film that gives you the horrors in terms of the that sort of thing, but not. I don't want to be made to jump.
Yeah, yeah, that's it. I don't mind sitting on the edge of my seat, like wondering which way the film's going to go, but these things that jump out of the closet and do whatever. It's just like... Oh,
it's an Agatha Christie or a Columbo.
Yeah.
With,
yeah, yeah.
Isn't it? It's very like an Agatha Christie, isn't it?
There is literally a bit where everyone's in one room and there's one person going around everyone trying to figure out who he is.
Yeah.
Like it's a Poirot.
Yeah, honestly.
Huge influence for Hateful Eight.
Okay. Absolutely.
To the point where they use some of Ennio Morricone's music from it.
We are gonna twist his mind here. We're gonna change it, hopefully.
I think it's twisted enough.
We're gonna twist your melon, man. We're gonna twist your melon. Paul, Charlie, I think we need to thank Tom for being an absolutely fucking marvellous guest.
Thanks very much, Tom.
I don't think so.
No, you don't. No. Thank you guys for having me on. Thank you for 10 years of quality podcasting. Thank you also for 10 years of friendship as well. The only thing that I wish would happen more often is that we live in the same fucking town. We see each other in the flesh. Do you know what I mean? I'd like a little bit more kind of meeting up in the flesh.
We can do that. I'm sure we can. Yeah. Yes. This Saturday evening thing that we think,
maybe I should come over to the Balaban Studios and do it there.
Than welcome, mate. Yeah. More than welcome. This Saturday evening thing, we've made it like an afternoon and evening thing now.
Bit easier for me as well.
And Tom, you are more than welcome, mate. Even, you know, if we were saying we're doing a stinking pause on blah, 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 have you got couple of hours on Saturday, come over, you know, mate. You are more than welcome. Absolutely.
See you in. I mean, I'm just as bad because I'm always like, oh no, I've got something to do or this or that or the other thing, but like, you know, it like in the last 10 years we've seen each other in the flesh, mate, a handful of times. You know what I mean?
I've always said that if you go a while without seeing someone, but you conversation as if you only saw them
and that's what I mean. That's what I mean. Like, thank you for 10 years of genuine friendship.
Likewise,
I mean that from the bottom of my heart.
No,
I love you guys and I love this show and I'm so glad that it's managed to continue going through like multiple people coming in and out, and it is what it is now, you know?
Yeah. Oh.
Tom, where can people find Band Biographies, sir?
You can find Band Biographies pretty much everywhere that you get your podcasts, except Spotify, because their copyright thing is incredibly scary. And I haven't submitted it.
We know that feeling.
I can't wait for the Madness one, mate. I'm so looking
forward to that.
I've got the first half almost done, and it's been almost done for months. And it's just, you know, there was the tour and then there's just been work. And then I just, you know, it's been a lot in the last few months, but I'm hoping to get back to it soon. I've done too many. I've done like a year of interviews rather than documentaries.
Yeah, and it's time to get tour again soon. I don't know. Madness.
Yeah, probably. Yeah, I mean, they released the album of their lockdown shows recently. So it's
Paul
like
Weller as well.
Yeah, that's right. Paul Weller, Roland Gift. I'm sure there was another guest as well. Charlie Higson co-wrote it with them as well.
Oh, right. Comedian.
Yeah. And they released that. It was done as a. They were going to be touring during 2020, but obviously couldn't. So they did this. Someone got a cold somewhere, you know, and then the rest of the world caught it. or not, depending on who you believe. So they did this stage show with all their friends and all that kind of thing, and it's like, it's almost like the history of the band but with music as well. So that's but yeah, I think it works more as a DVD than it does as an album. But yeah, hoping to bring that out very soon, the first half of that, which is from the origins to the first big breakup at the end of the 80s. And then taking the next half from the Reformation and their massive gigs in Finsbury Park right up until today, hopefully. It's all written. I've just got to talk into a microphone. In the last 2 months, my voice just hasn't been up to it. But being on the call with you guys for the last couple of hours has meant like I'm not losing my voice. So maybe it's time.
Yeah. We can't wait. We can't wait. Tom, it's been an absolute pleasure. Thank you so much, mate. Again, we're going to echo those sentiments of being a great friend and a great, you know, supporter of our podcast. Love you, mate. We're going to see you very soon. Take care.
Yes, indeed. Good to see you guys.
Cheers.
Cheers.
Thomas. Ah!
The management of this theater suggests that for the greater entertainment of your friends who have not yet seen the picture, you will not divulge to anyone the secret of the ending.
Astrid Arms, that infernal jamboree is worse than two cats on a fence.
You dudes get lost now, you hear?
Good night, ladies.
Good night, sir.
When you feel down, try positive thinking. That's what I told the man, said, don't wear a frown. Try positive thinking, laugh at your troubles instead. You've got to look on the bright side, on hope so much depends. With your confidence sinking, positive thinking helps you on the way, my friend. When things look black, try positive thinking, treat every season as spring. No glancing back, try positive thinking, trust what tomorrow may bring. This crazy world that we live in will keep on spinning round, but with good, strong, positive thinking, we'll get together and life won't let us down.
Shut up, you ugly bitch.
Oh, shut up. We enjoy it.